is Sappy Fest Radio on CHMA 106.9 FM in Sackville, New Brunswick. I am your creative director, Stephen Lampke. Very happy to be on the air this morning with a very special guest, Jennifer Castle, one of my all-time favorite songwriters, and future and past Sappy Fest performer. Hello, Jen.
Hi, Steve.
Can I call you Jen, or would you prefer Jennifer?
Well, thanks for asking. I deeply prefer Jennifer.
Jennifer. I slipped into the casual mode far too early. I apologize.
No, it's cool. You know, it's a funny name. It's like, I feel like Jennifer's or Jen's or Jenny's are very particular because I have like distinct memories of having six Jennifers in my grade five class, and we all had to have like really strict, it was like, she was Jen, I was Jenny, or Jennifer, and so now sometimes when people call me Jen, I'm always like, no, it's Jennifer or Jenny.
Okay.
I'm never the Jen, but you can call me whatever you want, but when people ask, I always say Jennifer.
But Jenny is also an acceptable variation for you.
Absolutely.
My friend Elizabeth asked me yesterday, kind of a new friend, and she was calling me. She greeted me as Steve and then asked if I preferred Steve or Steven, and her husband Glenn had been correcting her that it should be Steven, and I said that I really didn't care and that some of my friends call me Steve-Z.
Steve-Z.
So whatever works, you know, for me.
I mean, there's that too. I mean, so there's just, I mean, I don't, I'm, I have no hang up. when people ask a preference, you know, I have an answer.
Yeah. I through poor interviewing skills, we slipped into this right away, and I didn't mean to. I intended to give a more thorough introduction and greeting to you. I'm very very grateful that you're on the show this morning with me and with our listeners here in Sackville, New Brunswick, and we're excited that you're coming back to Sappy Fest this summer with a full band in tow.
That's right. I'm so excited too. It's like the pilgrimage.
Am I right in thinking you've only performed solo here before, previously?
I do believe you're right. I think that I've only performed solo. I mean, I've performed with Delora once with the full band,
That's
which
right.
was like really an incredibly fun time. But I think I've only played solo. Yeah.
Well, we're
trying to, you know, push it a little bit with this record. I'm trying to push it that you might envision me with a band when you envision my music, just because for so long I've toured solo and I really love touring solo. I love performing solo. It's like totally free, but with this record, I really want to try to like bring a band with me as many times as I can.
Your new record, Angels of Death, is fantastic.
Aw, thanks, Steve.
Very beautiful, beautiful album. And, I've not read a lot about it. I know that it very recently was released, so there's been reviews and you've done interviews and that kind of thing. And I can't say that I've looked at any of that material extensively, but the little bit I saw maybe referred to it as being death haunted, or that you were engaged deeply with a relationship to death or dealing with death. But when I listened to it yesterday in my headphones walking through the Waterfowl Park here in Sackville, I was struck particularly by the first song, Tomorrow's Morning. And since it is the first song, it perhaps maybe sets the tone in a way that I suppose I will at some point ask you if it's appropriate to interpret the rest of the album as following from that song. But it seems like you're more haunted by life than by death. in at least in that song, in the reference to the eternal and to the omnipresent and so forth.
So I mean, that's a good way of putting it. I felt like with that song, or with that concept for that song, it really, I just kind of reached a point where I figured going forward in hopes of living a long life, there will be mourning that will come with it, because we're all just kind of like, we all have our different exit times. So I just, myself included. So I just kind of like needed to kind of like look at that for a second. And that was kind of where that the idea for that song came from, was just that it will come, and that, you know, it's not something to like necessarily think about at all moments of the day, but that it will be part of our going forward, is that, and just kind of bracing myself for that and accepting it a little bit. That was kind of one of the things, you know. It's like it's a scattershot with a record. You have so many ideas that you're, you know, putting into music or whatever, but that was one of them, and it felt fitting for that to be kind of the opener, which is that, you know, wrapped up in the enthusiasm and the hopes for longevity was also like the nod to knowing what will come with that, and the sorts of things one can expect of what might tomorrow might bring, and that still with that you still might want to keep going and see what happens in the future.
And to hear you describe it now, it sounds hopeful. It sounds like a position that being like as if it's being sung from a position of hope. But the line that recurs a few times in the song is because there's no way out, and that just struck me as so mournful. And I wanted to see if you were okay, Jen.
Aw, well, I mean, melancholy is something that is real for me, and there's no way out. I mean, that's not as literal as, thank you for asking also. That's not as literal maybe as it might seem. There's lots of things that are inescapable within that song. There's also, you know, there's also lines like the ever omnipresent song and singing along. And that's also just, that also felt like a little bit of a nod to us that are consumed with rhythm and melody. And like, there's also been a great sort of compassion that I've come around to having for like music people and people that are, you know, there's sometimes there's nothing to do but deal with the music that you're constantly hearing. Or yeah, I talked about it with Victoria and Isla, who sing on the record. And, you know, just like compassion for the person that's been making patterns out of rhythms their whole life. And there's nothing, there's these concepts of music as career, like songwriting as record making, these sort of like really kind of pro experiences of music. But then there's just these like music, then we're just probably mostly just music people. And we've been dealing with how music is a constant distraction. Or else we get these pockets of time where we get to focus on it, but it never really goes away, for me at least, when I'm speaking for myself. So there's also that, where there's no way out of this kind of way of being. Mm-hmm. And so you just kind of have to give yourself over to it a little bit, and accept it, and just kind of walk with it and be a part of it. It can be very disruptive, music in our lives. It can be very disruptive. And so there's also that element to it, where I was just kind of accepting myself a little bit. And then there's no way out. Well, I mean, I hope there is no way out. I hope there isn't. I hope that there is no way out. I hope that, you know, even like on a day like today where, you know, some people, you know, can't make it, and they end their own lives, and you know, you hope that there's no way out. You hope you just take it to the last drop, and that someone or somewhere else makes the decision that it's your time to go, and that, you know, you don't give up that fight, that life, that there isn't an end in sight until it's over. And that, you know, so for me there was also just this resignment and this hope that like there's no way out unless, you know, God's making that choice, so, or whoever, the creator, whatever. So there's also just a resignment, and I hope that that resignment's always there with me. I hope there's no way out, you know.
Yeah, It's a beautiful way to start the album, and it's a beautiful song. It's a very kind of classic piano ballad song.
Well, that's
the way it's presented.
Yeah, thank you. Jonathan Adjamian plays piano on it.
Okay.
And he's such a dreamy pianist. Oh my gosh, he's so sympathetic, and like, I think it's beautiful how he plays on that song.
Jonathan might be most familiar to Sackville Sappy Fest audiences from his time in $100, mm-hmm. But obviously is a very active member of the Toronto, experimental improv kind of scene, maybe?
Yeah. And he's been bringing like world music he's been, you know, doing some world music, bringing in people as well. So he does like all sorts of eclectic music, loving and community building around that. And then also is an academic in his own right too, just finished a PhD.
And you mentioned Isla and Victoria. Could you maybe tell us who some of the other collaborators on this record are?
Yeah, so there's Isla Craig, who's releasing her own record, her third record this month. And then there's Victoria Chong, who is also known as New Chance around these parts and getting more known around other parts as well. Paul Mortimer, who's been playing guitar. I've been playing guitar with Paul for a long time. He's also from Highest Order as well in $100. There's Mike Smith, who played bass on Pink City and also string arrangements on Angels of Death and bass. Stu Crooks. There's Robbie Gordon for the first time on drums on this record. Dave Clark on rhythm guitar, I was listening to a track the other day because I was getting ready to talk about it, and like his rhythm guitar playing. He used to play drums with me, but he moved to rhythm guitar playing, and it's so sweet. I love it so much. I love his strumming all over that record. And there's the string players, and Brandon Maldivia plays conga. Matt Dunn plays drums on Crying Shame. A lot of Toronto people.
And a lot of people, but I, in case people haven't heard the record, I don't want to give the wrong impression. It's actually, in some ways, it sounds starker at points in some ways than maybe Pink City, your previous album. And that might be due to less sort of big string arrangements being used.
Mm-hmm. Well, we also recorded it as a band.
Okay.
So for the most part, like a big portion of it was recorded as a band, and I've never done that. So the band, and you know, when I play with a band, like often phrases I end up throwing out are things like, you know, let's hunker down together, and like nobody really move around too much, and you know, like nobody's having too much fun, you know, and really we keep a real tight unit and we just hunker it right down and get the vibration and keep going until the end. And that's, you know, I feel like we did that. And so even though there's all of us playing, in many cases we're all playing as one, so it does create sort of this kind of unified and in turn a little bit stark. And it kind of reminded me of You Can't Take Anyone years back. I said this one kind of reminds me more of You Can't Take Anyone, which was my first studio record, which was just me for the most part.
Yeah.
And I can't explain why, but maybe that's what you're getting at too.
Could be. And you revisit the song We Always Change,
right,
from that album. What's that? Why have you done that? Like, what is the connection between that song that you wrote so many years ago and these songs that are Angels of Death?
Well, I had been playing We Always Change over the past couple of years, just in my set, in general. I just kind of come back around to it. And when we did the Angels of Death sessions at the church that we recorded it at over this one weekend, we did a bed track for We Always Change, and it's like sort of a rockin' jam and number now. So we recorded the bed for that, but it didn't really work. I don't know. I couldn't put anything on top of it. It just kind of didn't sit in the best spot. So instead, when Mike Smith did the string arrangements for it, he did arrangements for that jam too, and Stu Crook put pedal steel on it. And then when we listened back, we were like, well, let's just lose the bed because I've already recorded that song anyway. And it kind of, then I realized that that song was kind of a little bit of like a midwife for the rest of the record a little bit, because its mission statement is transformation at the core. It's also a very anti-capitalist song for me. It's like a three punch to the gut of like patriarchy and capitalism. Like, I don't care about money, time, or reason. So I like its sentiment. And we just kind of, we just let it transform. Like, Jeff and I just kind of were like, oh, wow, you know, lose the bed, bring up the strings, bring up the steel, and we'll make reprises out of it. And that way.
So what we're hearing was recorded over a bed track, but then you've mixed the bed track out.
Yeah, we mixed the bed track out.
I understand now. Okay, I admit.
The bed track just wasn't sitting in the same spot. And also, maybe at this point in my life, I couldn't quite as convincingly sing, I don't care about money, and I don't care about time, which I don't, but it just wasn't coming across in any that convincing way, and I recognize the complexity of getting older in that way. But we let it be there as a sentiment, and we let it usher in the new songs, and also we let it link it to old work, which also felt important, because I've kind of been, you know, I'm always up for talking about those gloomy things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Always have been, always will be, probably.
My question about your collaborators was leading to another question, which is that in the lyrics and I suppose presentation of this album, Angels of Death, it seems much less peopled than Pink City, your previous album, where you were paying pretty explicit tribute and to friends and describing sort of specific people, it felt like, at certain points in the lyrics mm-hmm. of those songs. And on this album, there's much, much less of that. To the point that this feels very much like spending a half hour with Jennifer.
Yeah, I mean, I Pink City was like, felt like a very, very much like an ensemble record, and ensemble even in feeling. Like, yeah, I pointed a lot of fingers with Pink City, like a lot of different places I felt like I was pointing, and I did do that. I threw a lot of nets in terms of the manifestation of writing. When I wrote Pink City, I threw a lot of nets out. Like, I was like, I'm talking to this thing over here, or I'm pointing to this thing over there. And it was really specific exercise in writing for me, where I was like, what can I manifest but through writing these things? And, you know, whereas Angels of Death, yeah, the writing kind of just didn't go far from my own, you know, my own hands. Like, I didn't look that much further. I kind of had my own, I had a lot of stuff that was kind of on my own plate. Not to say that it's, you know, I was still a writer, which means I was still working in fiction. I was still doing creative writing in many ways. I was still, you know, maybe taking an idea and then expanding it into the realm, a more fictional realm, away from, like, evidence I could see necessarily in my everyday. But, yeah, no, Angels of Death feels like an intimate record of mine, for sure.
Yeah, and at one point you describe the poet as being your only friend, and that's, you know, a description of a fairly extensive loneliness, I suppose, if the voice of that song sounds unconnected to any of the people around it, if it's describing the red voice of the poet as being the only friend.
Yeah, I mean, there was a really big part of me to want to, like, talk to writers, because I'm a writer. And it's something that, you know, I've dealt with my whole life. It's like this weird compulsion to find solitude. And I've had to answer to it my whole life, I feel like, since I was around 10 years old. I've had the people closest to me have been saying, why always with this need to be alone? And I often feel like I'm trying to explain myself or bear particular fruits to those I've left alone to write. And also to say that, like, you're my only friend, I poet. Well, there's just some times in life where if we didn't have poets putting it to us, for me anyway, if poets hadn't put it to me a certain way and I get to read it, I don't think I'd know exactly how to navigate. I mean, poetry, without being, you know, specific to which poem or which author, because it happens all the time, right? Poetry happens all the time. I just wanted to kind of like make that sentiment seen that like it's good work what poets do. It's good work. It's abstract work. It's like dream work. It's kind of like REM sleeping, but in the daytime. It's rejuvenating and restorative. And I just kind of wanted to. There's been particularly literal moments where poetry saved my life, where I didn't know what else to do, and I turned to the book and went, oh, and it's unlocked a new spot in my heart where I've been like, okay, I can maybe make sense of this now. But then also, you know, just like in a more general sense, just like what creative writers are doing is like so important to me, and I always try to pay some homage to that because I also try to do that. Like, I can't make sense of it, but like I'm trying to do that as well, like honor that. Like, I feel very much like a student of that sort of thing, where I'm like, I also want to try to make creative sense of stuff, or I want, if maybe there's another way I could put this that could, you know, unlock a new way of thinking about it or something.
And then, so what are your thoughts about how that intersects with music, and more, maybe more specifically songwriting, where there's an inherent difference between poetry and songwriting, in that the songwriter is very much anticipating performing the song again or repeatedly, I think. I don't know if I can maybe extend that to be such a general statement as I just did.
No, that's okay. I was writing poetry very seriously as a young person. Very serious young.
Very serious poetry. Yes.
You know, really working on my poetry as a young girl, which is cute to me now. I'm like, oh, it's adorable. I found when I picked up the guitar, I think I was closer to 18 years old, and literally overnight, I picked up the guitar, I got my friend to teach me a few chords, and literally, I wrote a song that night. And then I wrote a eulogy to poetry, because I was like, poetry's dead. Like, I'm done. I was like, it's lyrics now. And there was a distinct difference in that for me. I was like, no. And still to this day, you know, very, very specifically, I'll say that's a poem, but that's not a poem. That's lyrics, you know, because lyrics are collaborative with melody for me. Mm-hmm. So poetry has to stand on its own. And lyrics, yeah, you have to be singing them in order for them to have their proper form. It's sculptural. It's like something like that. So, yeah, and they're very different to me. And I remember the change when I went from writing one thing to the other. I just didn't know. I didn't play music as a kid. I had no idea. I bought a guitar on a whim. And then I was like, oh, it was such a key. It was like such a key to me. I was like, holy geez. Like, singing was a totally big revelation for me, and melody. So yeah, there's a big difference, and things take a different form when you sing them every day or overnight, as musicians do. So yeah, I don't know if that answers anything.
I don't know if I asked anything.
So it's perfect.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just trying to.
It's perfect.
Yeah. Your singing on your own. Your solo performances, since the earliest time I've seen you perform, you have approached rhythm and your songs very freely, I would say.
Thanks, Steve.
And how is it different singing with a band? I imagine where you're forced to be more locked in together rhythmically.
Mm-hmm.
And how does that relate to the, you know, the questions of inspiration and or craft and or the muse that we've sort of been talking about.
Yeah, I mean, it is a big difference. And what I'm finding is, like, I just kind of tumble towards the ballad and say, and the crooners and jazz and, or like, you know, sort of, you know, jazz of a certain era, where just deliver the song and just, you know, I've been dissecting my own songs for a really long time. And I've been using them as a medium, not a product, for a really long time, you know?
Yeah.
I just feel like they are just a medium to sing. I think, well, that's even a lyric in an early song, you know? It's like the song is never the thing, was never the thing for me. It was like the way that I got to play guitar and sing. And it was more of a vehicle. And so I've always kind of approached it as that way. It's like, where are we going today? You know, mm-hmm. You start a song and you're like, where are we gonna drive by? And it's more locked in for sure. But, you know, I'm also just maybe at a point in my life where I was like, well, now I'm starting to be like, you know, what's really fun is when I don't play guitar and, you know, the band just counts in the jam and I just fall backwards into a song and start singing it and they just push me along. And so it's revelatory for me to have the opportunity to get to experience that aspect, because I've always distracted myself from my own songs while I'm playing them. And the guitarist is always is just very distracted and kind of hyper on the melody lines. You know, I'll just like go on a wander. As soon as there's a guitar involved, I'll start wandering around. Yeah. So this kind of, with all these other players, there, you know, it's kind of fun because it keeps me on a certain track. And then in order to find the freedom of the track, that once we're all in it together, I just express the song more. I just say, I'll put my guitar down altogether and just find the song, you know, and just sing it and find the freedom in that. So it is very different. I'm going to balance it with solo sets and band sets, because I also don't want to lose my ability to walk up on stage and just sing my songs, you know, and risk things and, yeah, and not, you know, over cherish them and things like that. I don't want to feel like there's a way that I have to play things. I never want to get locked into, you know, a place where mistakes could happen. I don't want to be in that spot. That's not why I got into rock and roll, you know?
I think that's beautiful. And the idea of the song as a medium and not the product is a wonderful thing to contemplate. I hear
medium is the message.
The medium is the message, as they say.
Hey, big quote.
It sounds like there's birds chirping around you, Jennifer.
Yeah, I'm sitting on my stairway outside in this little village that I live in. There are certainly birds chirping. Inside, like I said, my phone always cuts out. Every single time I have a conversation, people are like, what? I can't hear you. And I don't know why this particular apartment will just not let me speak on the phone.
Oh, no.
But I'm outside, as long as it doesn't compete with all the birds that are in all the bushes around me, trying to get on Sackville Radio, trying to talk to the waterfowl park.
Yeah, trying to talk to the swans, the angry geese in the waterfowl park with their fuzzy
like
little chicks.
We got a line to Sackville. We got to use it.
I very much appreciate you taking the time to speak with us, both yourself and the birds.
It's my pleasure, Steve. You're so sweet. And it's very sweet. It's very sweet that you'd ask, that you're having me back.
We're thrilled that you're coming back to Sappy Fest. Is there anything you'd like to say or add to us?
Oh, geez. Just that, Sackville, it's extremely exciting to be coming back with a band. And I mean, if any festival's seen me grow and change as a performer, it's Sappy, right? I mean, Paul Henderson gave me my first gig at the Vogue Theater there. And that felt monumental to me. I mean, nobody had given me a gig like that before. And that changed everything for me, just like playing on that stage. And then I've gone back pregnant. I've gone back with a toddler. I've gone back on my own. I've gone back with a rock band, Deloro. And now I'm kind of get to come back and And yeah, it's just very interesting. It ends up being a legacy festival for me. So I'm thrilled that I get to come back, and thank you for the support over the years. And also, just from the outside, it's a beautiful job you're doing to try to create a modern festival in an ugly climate. And I appreciate it so much. And it's just an honor to be a part of it. And the lineup looks amazing. Lots of people I'm looking forward to seeing, and lots of birds I'm looking forward to watching. And you know, I'll hit the beach. I'm just really excited. I couldn't be more honored to be coming back to Chappie Fest. That's all I want to say. Thank you so much for the support over the years. And then to you in particular, my friend Steve, Baby Eagle, Constantine's, complimenting me as a songwriter. I shrug it off and act cool on the radio, but it means a hell of a lot to me. Thank you so much for the support, eh?
Thanks.
We've been coming up together in this music world, right?
I got a new one I want to send you. I'm excited about.
Oh, please do.
Yeah, recorded with Daniel Romano this past winter. Hot new record coming. And you're a person I'd love to play it for.
Please do. I'm all ears. Yeah, thanks for the love, Steve.
Right before I let you go, I have the impulse to express myself all of a sudden. And describing Sappy Fest as a legacy festival, I don't know that I would personally like use a term like that, but when I stepped into this role as creative director last year, I definitely did a lot of thinking of and sort of examining what it means to have been around for so long as a festival. And I think this is also a question that, a performer or songwriter or artist of any stripe might ask themselves after they've been doing it a while. And this year is Sappy Fest 13. And the attempt to strike a balance between, incorporating new music that we're excited and thrilled by and inviting our old friends back who are still making music that we're excited and thrilled by causes some practical problems, obviously, because we only have so much space and certainly we only have so much budget. But it's an interesting challenge. But even beyond that, the sort of bigger question is like, what does it mean to have been doing this for 13 years? Or what does it mean that, we get together every year on this weekend in August to do this thing together that we call Sappy Fest? And it's a curious question, and it's intersected in many ways with the questions I ask myself about what it means to write songs and to perform and re-perform songs. And so I don't have an answer beyond that. I think like rituals are very beautiful and meaningful, and also in their own way, a ritual gathering can be very anti-capitalist, and it can be very community building and meaning building for people.
Absolutely. I mean, when you put it in terms of ritual, I'm even more game. You know, it's like, yeah, I feel like the things we do over and over are very telling. And especially around community building, and also letting things change, not trying to keep something the same, but, letting it change. And yeah, maybe Sappy's just a medium in itself for a music festival. It's not the Sappy any year. It's always, the Sappy that's occurring that summer. And if it remains reflective of that moment, then reflective of whatever the moment is that's happening that summer, then it's like really special. And it is morphing, and we do it every year. And I think that's important. We get together for music's sake, right? A lot of the musicians that aren't making a lot of money, and a lot of the musicians that aren't on the big radios getting their songs spun all the time and collecting royalties. I mean, the people that are really doing it because they have to, for emotional reasons or for the love of it, and they're playing music for people that love it. despite its success, and that's hopeful. We need a spot to go, man.
Well, I'm glad that this can be the spot for at least one weekend a year, you know.
Hey, me too.
And thank you for coming this summer, and we can't wait to see you. I won't take up any more of your time. Thank you again for joining me and joining us on the radio.
Thank
this
you.
Morning here in
Thanks
Sackville.
To the radio. Thank you for playing Angels of Death, guys. Yeah. And thank you so much for having me back. I'm really looking forward to it.
I'd love to play one of your songs, and also I'm happy to play if you had any requests of anything else. I'd also be happy to play that in my sort of last few minutes here on the radio. Is there a song of yours that would be a good, I don't know,
well,
summation
why don't,
or
why don't
continuation?
We play Tonight the Evening off the new record, Angels of Death?
Yes, wonderful.
Play the long one,
yeah,
you know, just to maximize airtime.
Yeah.
Just joking. But also, it's a good reminder on a day like today in Ontario where, you know, where we just got a big PC leader to just keep pushing, think of things in the long run, and, you know, just keep going for the long run.
I had hesitated and decided against bringing that sorrowful event up, but yes.
No, today is a good day to connect with our endurance, I think.
Absolutely. Okay, once again, thank you, Jennifer.
Love you, Steve. Thank you.
This is Jennifer Castle, my special guest today on Sappy Fest Radio, and this is her song, Tonight the Evening.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. That's Tonight the Evening by Jennifer Castle here on Sappy Fest Radio, CHMA 106.9 FM in Sackville, New Brunswick. Like to say thanks again to Jennifer for joining me this morning on the radio and discussing her fantastic new album, Angels of Death, with me. It's a wonderful, wonderful record that's highly recommended. You all should check it out. Easily available online and worth every moment that you spend with it. It's a rich, deep, beautiful album.